Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, and this music belongs to Kathy Cousins.
Nightbird, fly by nightbird, only singing when the sun has set.
A recent conversation with Kathy Cousins as she spoke to us from Detroit had me pretty much wondering exactly how she wound up getting into the world of jazz. Let me go ahead and start here by asking you how you got into jazz, because you were wrapped into the world of rock with Don Was and Was Not Was at one time.
I still am. I'm still in R&B art. In fact, my next record is going to be a soul jazz record, going back to my roots. What got me into jazz was in the very early 90s, I was writing pop and R&B with co-writers, with my collaborators that I was working with in Los Angeles and New York, primarily in New York. And the purpose of writing those particular songs with those guys wasn't for me to release for myself. Uh-huh. They were more with the thought that we were going to shop those tunes, or our publishers were going to shop the tunes, to get material recorded on already established artists. You know, like Whitney Houston, or like whoever was like the pop stars of the day. Celine Dion, those types of artists. One of the writers that I was working with on that material, and by the way, we did get a couple of cuts, but it wasn't on anybody like major, but yes, I still get royalties from some of the stuff that I had out, and some of the material ended up in film and TV. Two of the writers that I was working with were both real big jazz aficionados. And so was I, because at that time in my life, I was singing in fronted a big band here in Detroit, and Don Was and that whole Was Not Was group of people, they were all jazz musicians, every stinking one of them. It was just an oddball project that Don and David Was put together. But, you know, everybody in that band came from a jazz background. There really was not that much separation in the 80s and 90s in the world of pop and jazz. A lot of it, you know, they were blended together. Like back in the day, you know, they didn't call it smooth jazz. They just called it jazz, but it would be like Donald Byrd and the Blackbirds, or Angela Bofill, or Patti Austin. So it was all like R&B tinged with jazz, and jazz tinged with R&B. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah. Charles Erlin kind of piggybacked on stuff like that, and Jack McDuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the list goes on. I mean, you even had people like, not Sonny Rollins, Sonny...
You had Stanley Turrentine doing stuff like
Stanley
that.
Stanley Turrentine, Herbie Hancock.
Yep.
Was doing what was it? Who did Watermelon Man? Was that?
Yeah, it was Herbie. It was Herbie.
All of that stuff. I Weather Report. There were all these. It was more friendly. There was no. Today it's like, you know, left wing, right wing. You know, you've got this and that, and there's too many. Back then, it was very, very bipartisan, if you want to call it that.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's what it was. It was bipartisan music, and it crossed genres very easy. And they didn't have a word called smooth jazz. I mean, and Herbie Hancock and Ramsey Lewis, and all these people were coming up with tunes that were both would be crossover. There would be both R&B, and they would also cross over into jazz. And jazz radio back then wasn't National Public Radio, where it was just a jazz station without commercial. You had commercial radio playing that kind of music. They'd play Steely Dan or Pink Floyd cut, and Jimi Hendrix in the next cut, or whoever, Led Zeppelin in the next cut, and then in the next cut, they'd play Patty Austin or Phyllis Hyman.
Mm-hmm.
So there was really no separation like there is today. So to make a long story short, these writers and myself got together, and I said, let's write a whole body of work that's steeped in jazz. We'll try and get cuts with the jazz ladies. At that time, this was the early 90s, I was thinking Diane Shore, Diane Reeves. I was thinking Nancy Wilson, maybe Lena Horne. You know, anybody who was alive and doing jazz might be interested in my material. And I wrote an entire disc. But the thread of the disc was really interesting. All the songs were very cohesive. The writing was very clever. Some of my writings, I didn't even know who Dave Furstberg was back then, but now when I look at my stuff, I'm thinking, my God, this stuff is very Furstberg-esque. So the idea was to try and farm this material off. Next thing you know, a record label approaches me from here in Detroit, a little independent jazz and blues label that also had a retail store. They were called School Kids Records.
Right, uh-huh.
And they signed me. And so this material came out on me, not these other artists. So that was my first foray into the jazz world as a jazz artist, soloist. And really, I got there via my writing, and it was kind of like a happy accident. I wasn't looking for a record deal as a jazz artist. I was writing pop and R&B and singing pop and R&B and flying around the country and doing all sorts of weird things. And I was singing in a big band, a society big band here in Detroit. I wasn't looking for a jazz record deal. So I was very naive about the whole thing. So the record came out, and that was 1995, 6, 7, 8, 9, 2000. 7 years later, I waited 7 years, and then I finally put out record number 2, which came out on Chiaroscuro, which was called Mood Swings, and on that disc there are 7 original tunes. And then in 2006, 4 years later, we had out Vintage, which I cut with Aaron Goldberg and Eric Harlan and those guys in New York. And that was really my fundamental, that was like being on the ground floor, planting little seedlings in my brain about the Ladies of Cool. Because on that CD, there's a couple of real interesting obscure cuts that Julie London recorded, like Nice Girls Don't Stay for Breakfast and Go Slow. And there was a June Christie, a very obscure June Christie tune that was on the Something Cool record that nobody bothered to pay attention to, called Look Out Up There in Your Heavenly Sing, which I found on a Mel Torme record, which came out on there. So it was kind of West Coast coolish, even before. I mean, it was like really planting seeds to go into this whole West Coast cool thing. And then in 2008, I cut a CD which was never released called Mid-Century Modern, and I cut it in L.A., and Tamir Hendelman played on it, and these various guys played on it. And it sat on the shelf. Never did anything with it. Didn't put it out. Didn't release it to radio. It's now been released to radio as The Space Between, which is the CD that you have.
Right.
What happened was I cut this thing in 2008, and within that decade, within that couple of years, I decided to make this Ladies of Cool record for Resonance. It was a concept record, like a one and done. So it was the same guys, same pianist. Jameer did the arrangements, and then various people played on it that myself and Resonance decided to bring in. And so that record came off, and based on the strength of that record, which really did well, it got a lot of radio play. That was during the time when the Jazz Week chart disappeared for a month and a half. Remember?
Right.
It was down because somebody didn't. It entered the charts at like number 40-something the first week out of the box. And then the next week, there was no more jazz chart for about 10 weeks or 12 weeks. And so we think that if the chart was up and running, my CD probably would have been in the top three or top four because it was that strong of a disc. Based on the number of plays that we counted up every week on college and jazz radio, the Spinatron stations too. So based on the strength of the Ladies of Cool CD, Mahogany Jazz approached me and said, hey, let's put out Mid-Century Modern. We'll change the title. We'll change the artwork. We'll scrap a couple tunes, and we'll put on a couple bonus tracks. Maybe we'll put on that Live at the Jazz Standard, the tune that was already recorded on the 2006 disc. And maybe we'll put that hip-hop or that chill record out that you did of Nightbird, which was on the Ladies of Cool, because I went up my buddies, produce and engineer, and do. They have, you know, big studios at Eminem Studio, which is down the street from my house.
Wow.
So I went in there one day, and I said, hey, let's take Nightbird and do a chill mix. And they all laughed. And it was like my little science experiment. But it worked. And you know what? A lot of late-night radio people played that thing. So we just stuck it on the end as a bonus track just to see if anybody would get it. And people got it. So now what I'm doing for my next project, well, in between 2006 and now, I started touring a lot with no agent and no manager. I put myself on the road. I'm on the phone 8 hours a day when I'm not on the road, and I'm hustling gigs. I mean, there's really no scientific way to get these gigs except just to be very tenacious and aggressive and hustle. And they might say no to you six times, but then all of a sudden, like this guy from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, been trying to get this gig since 2005. I look at my original notes. Out of the blue, I get an email from this guy 2 weeks ago offering me a date in 2015. So in the meantime, I thought, well, what am I going to do for my next record? I mean, I came to jazz radio with the space between because I wanted to stay in the face. I wanted to stay. I had the ear of jazz radio. So I thought, you know, maybe we should put this thing out and see if they like it. Well, for 20 straight weeks, it stayed in the top 100 on the Jazz Week chart.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the top 50 for half of that, and it was in the top, I think, 25 or the top 30 for a good 4 or 5 weeks at least. So, you know, considering the fact that I fought Mahogany Jazz tooth and nail, and I did not want to put this thing out because I didn't want to take a step backward from the Ladies of Cool. And it was recorded in 08, and I thought, you know, I've come a long way in my career. Why do I want to put something out that I recorded? But I didn't tell anybody that. And people like the record, and they're still playing it. So I have no complaints.
You better love me while you may. Tomorrow I might fly away. You've got that gentle touch, that sentimental touch, that elemental touch. And you love me too, yes, I know that you do. You better love me while I'm here. 'Cause I've been known to disappear.
We're sampling something from The Space Between, the album she was talking about earlier, about recording it back in 2008, and then suddenly in 2012, including us, we played the daylights out of this song and a lot more. You'd Better Love While You May is that. back on to that conversation we had with Kathy Cousins. Go back to when you were a kid growing up in Detroit. I mean, I saw a piece of your bio where your dad took you to go to a Broadway show.
You saw that Notes on Jazz blog piece.
Yeah,
I went with my parents in 1967. This was like when Hair opened up on Broadway. And yeah, when I saw that musical at my very young age, I was a young teenager, and I thought, wow, and you know how impressionable you are when you're that age.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is what I want to do. I want to be on a stage. I didn't know in what capacity, and I didn't know if it was going to be theater or music or dance or, you know, and I dabbled in everything. I dabbled in photography, in theater, in dance, in art, and it turned out that I became a visual artist many, many years later, and I do a lot of multimedia. I think you probably know that about me, don't you?
Yeah.
Artwork.
Yeah, you see,
I've posted stuff online. And I love the fact that these guys talked me into putting this record out. Now, people say, well, what are you going to do for the next thing? Well, I was going to start recording in May and get a record out in September. And I thought, you know what, I don't want to be pressured like that. I just don't. But what I will do is I won't wait just 2 or 3 years to get another record out. I'll come up with a record so it has a release date, say, a year from today, you know, like next February or next January or February or March. It won't be beyond March. And Gregory Porter's, the first thing that I was going to do was I was going to work with this producer from New York who's produced a lot of people's records. And he used to be head of jazz at Warner Brothers. His name is Matt Pearson. And I went and I met with him in New York, and I didn't get a feeling like this was going to be a really great collaboration because he wanted control of everything. And to be honest with you, I've never had a producer on any of my jazz records.
Oh my gosh.
I do them all myself. All I need is an arranger, not a producer. I have a really good ear for this. I know what I want, and I know what I'm very critical of myself, and I know what I can get off of a record date. All I need to do is assemble the studio, the players, and the scheduling is always a challenge, and then looking at the studios and picking a studio and deciding where I'm going to cut the thing. But if I have a good arranger, then it's all going to work out.
Right.
So I met with this guy in New York, Matt Pearson, and I just didn't get a sense that this guy had my best interest at heart as a producer. Plus, he was going to take production points and everything. And I thought, you know what? You know, at the beginning of the conversation, he was, oh, I'm going to talk to Mac Avenue. I'm going to talk to this one. And then as we got closer to, like, making a deal, you know, he said, well, I can't guarantee you anything, and you shouldn't count on me for trying to help you get a deal or, you know. All of a sudden, the whole landscape changed. So I said, uh-huh, okay, let me think about it. And then I emailed him a week later, and I said, we're not going to do this, sorry. It's just not going to work. So I found Gregory Porter, a guy that used to live here in Detroit, a guy by the name of Kamau Kenyatta, and he's a fairly good musician, and he's a very good arranger, and he lives in San Diego, and he teaches jazz studies at the University of California, San Diego. Gregory Porter was his student at a community college 15 years ago, or 20 years ago, and he took Gregory Porter under his wing, and Gregory Porter used him on his last two records, and he won the Grammy twice. So I thought, you know what, this guy's from Detroit, he's like family, I know him. I called him up, and I said, do you want to do this with me? I need an arranger, and he has parents that still live in Detroit. I said, look, this is good, because when you come home to visit mom and dad, you and I can, like, get together and collaborate these arrangements, and we can really, like, get a handle on it. And I said, and we can cut in L.A. at one of many studios. I'm not going to do another record with Resonance. Like I said, that project was a concept, and it was a one and done.
Right.
And I don't know where this next record would come out. I always have a fallback position on Mahogany Jazz. I can shop this thing myself. If nobody wants to put it out, I'm going to put it out on Mahogany Jazz. I'll pay for everything. I'll pay for the recording, the musicians, the arrangements, the studio. And, you know, a label can pick up an option, and I can own the masters, just like everything else, with the exception of the Ladies of Cool record, which they own.
Right.
So, and they didn't even pay for everything. I ended up splitting the bill with those people.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
It was very expensive. Very expensive. But I own the arrangements. I paid for the arrangements and the musicians. They paid for the studio, the manufacturing, the distribution, and the radio and print publicity. So my next record, I am going back to my R&B roots, and I'm going into the Curtis Mayfield, Bill Withers, Gene McDaniels songbook, and a couple of other writers. And I'm writing between 2 and 4 tunes for this record myself.
Nice.
I've already written a couple. My co-writers are the same people that I wrote the jazz stuff with back in the early 90s. In fact, the two guys that I'm working with wrote that beautiful song for Diane Reeves called When You Know. So these are good songwriters, and I'm writing with them. And we just finished a tune called If Love Could Talk, and it's really beautiful. And this song could be cut. I said to the writers, I said, hey, guys, I'm willing to give this up for me as the artist. I said, you could take this to anybody from Carrie Underwood to Garth Brooks. I mean, it's genre. It can cross genders and genre. It could be jazz. It could be pop. It could be country pop. Martina McBride. There's a whole plethora of artists that could cut this thing. It's a beautiful song. So I think we're going to try and do that, but there's no reason why I can't cut the thing myself, and then if somebody needs exclusivity on it, you know, some big artist, heck, I'd rather give the song up and take the publishing royalties. So
there's a lot more to this conversation we had with songwriter and arranger, jazz musician, jazz vocalist Kathy Cousins. Visiting KathyCousins.com will net you some pretty interesting abstract paintings, as well as a lot of her songs that she's done over the last few years. But one of the things she's most proud of is this piece from To the Ladies of Cool, her latest endeavor, one she co-wrote with Johnny Mandel. One called Hershey's Kisses.
Every little Hershey's kiss that you give me puts me in a spin, I'm lost in a tizzy. Give me some more, I'll even move into the store. 'Cause it's you I adore. I like every almond joy that I've tasted. Never has a Snickers ever been wasted. But I can't deny, your Hershey Kisses are to die for. M&M's can always melt in my mouth. I go for pralines when I'm in the South. Indulgence is my middle name, no doubt. I'd love a good and plenty ending. So thrill me once again with those Hershey's Kisses. If you'll be my mister, I'll be your missus. Life is so sweet whenever you bring me a treat. Should you do, but it, David, you do, but it, Indulgence is my middle name, no doubt. I'd love a good and plenty ending. So thrill me once again with those Hershey's kisses. If you'll be my mister, I'll be your missus. Stay where you are. I'd love another Hershey bar. You are. I love you, Mr. Hershey Bar. Hershey Bar.
That's a song called Hershey's Kisses, and it's from the latest album, To the Ladies of Cool, from Detroit jazz singer Kathy Cousins, who also is an incredible abstract painter, amongst other things. Her new projects will be taking her around the world and back into the studio in 2015. In the meantime, we thank you for listening, and we certainly hope that we can continue this conversation at a later date. There's a lot to tell you about this lady. Her name, Kathy Cousins, and we want to thank her for spending some time with us on El Paso Primetime. We also want to send her a quick happy birthday shout-out to Kathy Cousins. It's her birthday, and she's spending it back home in Michigan. Past episodes of El Paso Primetime are on our website. Just click on the Listen Live button, and then look for the archives under El Paso Primetime. El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP. We invite you to come back next Saturday afternoon at 1. Stay tuned. Louis Signs is next with Perspectives. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time for another edition of El Paso Primetime.